everyone who is in recovery, discovery, just learning, or somewhere in between, it's Purse, and today is going to be the last official episode in the past 3 or 4 months that I've been doing this for the year of 2017. Next week's episode is going to be a little different, reviewing, reflecting, so this topic's going to be the last kind of topical, I suppose, podcast episode for the year, and this is a topic that I think is really important, especially in the holiday slash gift giving season. We need to remember those who are less fortunate than us, or people who have had a bad break, have been down on their luck, and are now just in a disadvantageous position. So we will be talking about mental health, mental illness, and homelessness, and we'll be answering some questions, including, you know, are all homeless people mentally ill? Because that's a question that I've gotten. And what comes first, the mental illness or the homelessness? All these different kinds of questions. How can we help homeless individuals? What is homelessness? How do we define homelessness? I did do some research on this topic. I know that's also a little different from what I usually do. I usually don't do too much research going into topics, just because I don't have time. So I base things off of my own personal experience. But I've never been homeless. So this has been researched. There's not going to be a wealth of like sources or links in the description of this. I just looked up a couple of articles, mostly government articles about statistics, government and medical articles, because I'm a student. So I have access to a lot of papers, like research papers and such, that regular people would probably have to pay like $14, $15, $20 for or whatnot. So I read through some of those, skimmed through, jotted down some notes. This isn't going to be super full of statistics. We'll just be talking just generally, you know, about homelessness. So first of all, well, what is homelessness? You know, there are different kinds of homeless. And usually when you say homeless, a lot of people think of, especially if you live in a big city, a lot of people think of individuals who are lying on the street with sleeping bags and backpacks and tarps or whatnot, and they are literally homeless, without home, without shelter, they're on the street. And one of the articles I read actually broke down the different kinds of homelessness, and that they called was absolute homelessness, and they described that as living on the street or in places unfit for human habitation, so like abandoned buildings or vehicles. And then there are individuals who are at risk of homelessness, so households that spend more than 50% of its total income on housing costs. And there's other words for those individuals, I suppose, so like the working poor, or I've heard like poor middle class, lower middle class, basically families. So there's this whole like financial percentage chart breakdown, and it says something like you should only spend like 40% of your earnings or whatever on like essentials like housing and bills and whatnot, and then another portion, like 30% or whatever, on savings, and then the remainder on disposable or whatnot. And basically, that breakdown is there because there are people who spend more than 50, 60, 70, 80% of what they are making into bills and into their house. And, you know, they're afloat, but it's not something that you can sustain, because the problem is if you're putting all of that money, like if you're just paying out all of that money into bills, you're not accumulating enough savings so that if something does go wrong, you know, your car breaks down or there's an accident, you need to pay hospital bills depending on where you live. You just need to pay out of pocket for something that's not foreseen. And you pay more than 50% of your income into housing costs and bill costs. And then there is a large cost that is unforeseen. A, you wouldn't have built up enough savings to cover that cost, which would require you to dip into your income to pay for that cost. And because your living expenses are so high, you would fall short in some of your bills and then be at risk of being evicted. So, it's not a sustainable practice to pay the majority of your income on housing costs. And I feel like I'm dipping into Chris of Popcorn Finances territory, talking about finances and housing. So there are, but yeah, there's individuals at risk of homelessness, and that's a very, very bad version of a financial lesson on why you should keep your living costs a small percentage of your income, even if you need to downsize your life. Because when something unforeseen does come up and you can't pay for it, you put yourself at risk of losing a lot. And then there's hidden homelessness. And hidden homelessness, as described, are individuals who are temporarily staying with friends or family, also known as couch surfers, depending on the community, usually younger individuals, you know, single youth are called couch surfers compared to parents, like single mothers or whatnot, who need to move in with a friend because they're running from another situation. And then people, what does that say? It also says members of this segment of the population are staying neither in shelters nor on the street and can thus be difficult to count. It's also important to note that a lot of hidden homeless people live in like some countries and whatnot have like social programs where they are in shelters, but it's like single female parent shelters or whatnot, or they're being put up in like temporary housing. There's programs where like certain governments and municipalities will like put you up in an apartment for 3 months to say 2 years, depending, and you have to like see a counselor every month or every couple of months. It's a program, and basically you need to get a job, and then you can apply for those kinds of programs, and they'll set you up in a apartment or like a townhouse, depending on where you live and what the housing market's like. And they'll pay your rent, or they'll pay the majority of your rent. You only need to pay like less than $100, depending, either like $10 to $100, contribute, and then you're supposed to be taking the rest of your money that you're working for and saving it so that you can apply it to getting back on your feet. And you need to see counselors like every month, every couple months, and keep track of the money you're getting, and they'll help you disperse that out properly, which I believe also falls under hidden homelessness and not under absolute homeless. So those are, you know, the three kinds of homelessness that that article described. And even before the article, that was probably that's how I was thinking of it as well. Well, like, what is homelessness? Again, most people think about absolute homelessness as if that's the only kind of being homeless. And I find a lot of people forget about instances of the working poor or instances of people who are, you know, living in hidden homelessness. And it's really easy to, I suppose, insult or look down upon a sect of society that you don't believe infiltrates, you know, the places that you frequent, or infiltrates the wrong word. You don't believe are present in the place that you frequent. You know, it's really easy to go to school and say, I passed four homeless people on the street today. You know, they just need to get up, pick themselves up by the bootstraps. I use that all the time because of our current political climate. But they just need to, you know, find a job, get a house, you know, save money, you know, stop being addicted to what they're addicted to. And it's so easy to say these things, especially if you've never experienced homelessness or you've never experienced hard times. You've always known where your next meal is going to come from. You've always known that your rent's going to be paid. All these kinds of things. It's really easy to say these kinds of things because a lot of people don't interact with homeless people ever in their lives, never mind a day-to-day basis. So it's a lot of stereotyping, a lot of preconceptions, a lot of placing your privilege onto the homeless. You know, saying like, I had this one hardship in my life and I overcame it, so they should be able to overcome it as well. And it's a huge portion, it's a huge kind of ignorance that I think a lot of people just ignore, you know? They ignore, you know, we talk about immigrants and how we can't be ignorant to immigrant situations in different cultures and whatnot. We talk about racism and how, you know, a lot of racists, that stems from ignorance and fear, homophobia, and just, you know, ignorance towards the LGBT community. But we tend not to talk about ignorance towards the homeless community, because we like to place ourselves in the shoes of the homeless and say, you know, if I was you, if I lived through these experiences, I would still be able to keep my job, or I would have done this differently in order to keep my house and not lose my family, or I wouldn't have done all these things. And one thing that I've learned, one of the biggest lessons I've learned in 2017, probably, is that it's different when it's you. A lot of people like to say a lot of things, putting themselves into other people's shoes and saying, you know, if I went through that kind of situation, or if my boss said this to me, or if my friend was treating me like this, or if my husband did this, I would never stand for it. Until your boss or husband or friend does that thing, and you are in the same situation. And it's the most cliche, but the best example is why, you know, everyone seems to give great relationship advice until they get into a dead-end relationship, and then all their friends turn around and say, you know, you gave me this advice, why would you follow this advice? And they're like, no, like my situation's different. But it's not, but it feels different because you're the one experiencing it. And a problem too with only seeing homelessness as absolute homelessness is that all of that negativity and ignorance and unfair assumptions and preconceptions that you are placing on those homeless people who are living on the streets, or in unfit conditions, you are also placing on your friends who are at risk of homelessness or who live in hidden homelessness. You know, just because you go to your friend's house and they live in an apartment and it's moderately well furnished and they have toys and there's some artwork or whatnot in there, doesn't mean that they're not either struggling to keep that space or they're just a guest in a common space that is used for anyone who is homeless. And it's one of those programs where the government puts you up in just random housing for a couple months to a couple years for you to get on your feet. You know what I mean? Like, not all the furniture you see in someone's house could be theirs or owned by them. And that's a reality that a lot of people, I don't think, realize. And it's hard because you don't want to walk into someone's house and say, are you homeless? Like, are you on government assistance? Because that's rude. But you also shouldn't assume that everyone lives the exact same way that you live, and as such would have the exact same opinions towards homelessness or anything else that you would have. And that's my kind of piece on it. So another question, another important question is everyone who is homeless mentally ill? And my answer to this is no. Because again, usually when people think of this question, they think to say yes, because they only think about people who are in an absolute homeless condition. You know, those people who sit at the side of the street and they're talking to themselves, or they yell at you as you pass. Although they might not have a mental illness, they might just be angry. But most of the time, people who say yes to this question only think of individuals who are in absolute homelessness and think, you know, the only person who could get to such a point and where they're literally living on the streets must be mentally ill. Now, not everyone who is experiencing absolute homelessness is mentally ill. However, and this is just me making an assumption. This is not anything that I read anywhere. That's my disclaimer. This is just me speaking out of my butt because I've never researched this. But I would assume that out of the three, being at risk of homelessness, being in hidden homelessness, or with an absolute homelessness, the highest percentage, if you are mentally ill enough at which to a point where you are at risk of losing your house and your livelihood, and then you become some sort of homeless, I would assume that you would just go straight to absolute homelessness. So I would assume that the largest percentage of mentally ill individuals who are homeless, experience absolute homelessness compared to the other three. Which is probably why a lot of people assume that all homeless people are mentally ill, because what matches their perception of what homeless is has also the highest highest concentration of mentally ill people within that community. But no, not everyone who's homeless is mentally ill. Some people come out of very poor family situations, or they just have a really, really unlucky streak of bad luck that had them losing their job. They couldn't find a new job. They lost their house. Maybe they turned to substances, and then they were homeless. That's not to say that they were ever mentally ill. It could have just been a string of poor choices. There's so many reasons why someone could be living literally on the streets and be homeless. Though, again, there is a correlation between absolute homelessness and mental illness, which we will get into. As, for example, or next point, not for example, when it comes to being at risk of homelessness or living in like hidden homelessness, you could even argue that these individuals, well, I wouldn't say you could argue that these individuals aren't mentally ill, because there are people who are higher functioning with mental illness, but these are, this is probably where you'd find a larger concentration of people who either don't have mental illness, or they aren't low functioning with their mental illness, or their mental illness isn't always debilitating. You know, if you are in hidden homelessness, but you are in a situation where you're in a program that's helping you get back on your feet, even if you are mentally ill, you're not a stereotypical kind of like talking to thin air, heckling at people, sort of mentally ill. You are trying to work through your issues and trying to get back on your feet. I had a distraction, which is why my voice trailed off. Things were happening in my house, but I'm back. What I was gonna say is that equating without exception mental illness with homelessness just furthers a stereotype and is actually very offensive to, well, first, people who experience mental illness, and also people who are homeless. Implying, and it's a form of othering, you know, it's a form of distancing oneself from homeless people, which usually means that your only perception of homeless people are people on the streets, you know, or in living in conditions that are unfit for habitation, and you're othering yourself from that kind of life. So it's basically to say, you know, I could never see myself making decisions so poorly, or squandering so many opportunities to which I will end up living on the streets. So I don't understand how anyone could have that happen in their life. Such to say that the only people who are homeless must be so unstable, or not cognitively aware, that they have to be mentally ill. And people usually go, like, to the most extreme mental illness, you know, dissociative identity disorder, or schizophrenia, psychosis, those kinds of intense, really, really debilitating mental illnesses, which they are. But most people say, you know, you'd have to be that kind of mentally ill to end up in a position like that, because I don't see how someone who's had opportunities like I have and a lifestyle like I have could end up in a position like that, because I don't see myself ever ending up in a position like that. Or they go the other route with the question, do all homeless people have substance abuse problems? And a lot of homeless people do have substance abuse problems, especially in absolute homelessness, which is also to say it's another form of othering. You know, all people addicted to substances succumb to the substance so much that that's all they think about, it's all they put their money towards, they made poor decisions, they put themselves in poor situations, and now this is where they ended up, and I will never be in that situation. And there's two reasons why this kind of thinking is wrong. One is because removing yourself from the possibility of that situation, A, removes your ability to prepare for a situation like that, you know? If you have a couple million in the bank and you don't plan on losing your job anytime soon, no, I don't think you're going to be homeless. However, you know, things happen. Even if you're not on the streets, again, you could be hidden homeless. You could have to move back in with your parents. You and whoever you're married to and all your kids might need to shuffle between your parents and your parent-in-laws and all of your relatives-in-laws because of an issue. Or you might just suddenly become at risk of homelessness. And now you're spending a huge portion of your combined income or your individual income just trying to make ends meet. And that's really stressful. And being in a position where you don't think things like that can happen to you, either because, you know, you're not mentally ill or you're not addicted to substances, isn't setting you up in the best position to move forward. The second reason why having this kind of perception isn't fair or isn't helpful is because it puts all of the blame on the individual who is homeless, and none of the blame on the society that has caused them to be homeless. Now, I'm not going to be one of those people that says, you know, society is the root of everyone's problems and we need to change everything that we do in order to make sure everyone's accommodated for. No, there are some people who are homeless or who are at a disadvantage in other places in life just because they have put themselves in those situations and they have consistently made poor decisions that they knew with all of their cognitive functioning and knowledge that they were making poor decisions, and they made them anyway, and the result of their decisions is that they're homeless or in another disadvantageous position. And that is what it is, and it's unfortunate, but if that's the life that you chose to lead, that's where you end up. But there are a lot of people who, you know, are homeless because they were born into poverty. And wherever they were born into, there weren't a lot of ways for people born already impoverished to pull themselves out of that poverty. You know, their highest bar, the highest thing that they could achieve is to just continue the poverty that they were born into or fall so below the cracks that they are now homeless. There's a lot of systems in place that wants to route money to people who, objectively, you could argue, don't need any more money than they already have, which involves gouging the middle class and, in some cases, even some of the richest of the lowest class, in which case keeping people in constant poverty, or pulling people out of poverty so much that they become homeless for whatever reason, which is why you see a lot of people who experience hidden homeless situations. People who are in, you know, hidden homeless situations or at risk of homelessness, but are still contributing to society, are still functioning members of society, are still going to work every day and taking their kids to school and, you know, volunteering and doing what they need to do. You can't look at those people and say they are lazy and they just need to get up and get a job and clean themselves up and get off the drink, because they already have a job, they've gone to school, they've gotten their degree, they've done all the right things. It's just either, you know, housing costs are too high, or the business that is the post-education system, and a lot of countries put people in so much debt that they can't get out of it. And that really, really sets people back. Especially if you have so much debt in your education, and then you have car payments and housing payments and bill payments and all these things, it adds up. And the moment something goes wrong, especially in a country like the United States, where a lot of people need to pay for a good portion, if not all, of their healthcare out of pocket, one setback can set you on the path spiraling down towards homelessness. And this is where we move into what causes homelessness in the mental health community, but also what causes homelessness in a lot of people's communities. And one of those things coming out of just the topic of societal stressors, external factors, there's internal factors that cause homelessness. For example, you know, addictions, conducting yourself in certain ways where your actions lead you to become addicted, or your actions, you make poor choices, whatnot, and now you're homeless. And then there's external factors. And one thing that external factors breed are high levels of stress. And human beings are not made to be under constant stress their entire lives, or for years at a time. And that's what a lot of people are feeling, especially in a financial climate where it seems like there's no way you can get ahead, and you're struggling just to stay where you are, just to make ends meet. Because everything's getting more expensive, but no one's making enough money to keep up, you know, keep up with the rising costs of just everything, housing, pleasure, work, or education, things that are involved with work. There's quite a few jobs where you need to spend your own money to make sure you are equipped to do the job that pays you to buy those things. So it's a cycle. It's a cycle, right? And stress is a really big one. And stress is what can just knock down people who are constantly in a state of being at risk of being homeless. Because one thing, especially in our society, nothing's necessarily secure. But one of the things that kind of dictates your feeling of security, because we don't necessarily have natural predators anymore. You're not going to walk out of your house and be mauled by a tiger or a bear or a bobcat. It's mostly just housing security. And that's tied into the very physiological need to just have shelter and somewhere to live and feel safe, but also the societal expectations that you need to have the big house or the fancy condo or the pool in the backyard or a separate bedroom for every kid in your house, you know? So it's a twofold thing. It's a societal thing, not only, well, it's a basic natural instinct to have shelter, and then it's a societal thing to have a certain kind of shelter, a certain kind of house to keep up with the people that you're around. And for example, if you're constantly at risk of being homeless, if you're constantly under this stress, this immense pressure, bills are piling up, you know, you're short this week, you're short on this thing, it's really easy to fall behind or to just say, you know what, I'm giving up. Or your brain becomes so muddled that you're not even doing the math properly, and you dig yourself into an even bigger hole than you were in before. Especially for people who aren't mathematically inclined and aren't that good at reading contracts, there's a lot of clauses that get people stuck. So stress, and also, you know, companies making things harder than they need to be and not being completely transparent, because transparency means they make less money. So again, another societal factor. Now just coming into what causes homelessness in the mental health community. This is the question again. It's like a chicken and the egg kind of question, you know. Does mental illness cause homelessness, or does homelessness cause mental illness? And the answer that I've come across is yes, no, sometimes, a bit of both, and it depends. So for example, this goes across every kind of disorder. If you have any sort of disorder or diagnosis that's debilitating or keeps you from functioning normally or at par with everyone else, when you are in one of those episodes, you are at risk of becoming homeless. And we're not just talking about like hidden homeless, we're talking about like absolute homeless on the streets. If you're having a psychotic episode or a paranoid episode in which you can't leave your house, or a depressive episode or an anxiety panic attack, or you're going through a bipolar mood swing where either you're super depressed that you can't leave your house, or you're so manic that you're going to work but you're telling your boss off and that you can like do your job better than they can, both extremes, either extreme of the spectrum, is going to keep you from getting to your responsibilities, you know, from getting to work on time, or from doing your work properly, or from doing your schoolwork properly. And especially if people don't know what's going on, but even if they do know what's going on, a lot of people tend to be supportive and accepting of mental illness until it actually rears the ugly symptoms, and then they're like, whoa, never mind. in those kinds of situations, you know, you're at risk of losing that job. You're at risk of losing your acceptance at your school, losing your housing in some cases. If you are, you know, at a university or at some sort of institution and you lose the ability to participate, whether it's in the studies or the activities, and then they kick you out, I'll kick you off the campus, you might very well not have anywhere to live. If you lose your job because of your behavior related to your mental health, you are probably going to also lose your house, you're going to lose your house also because you can't pay for it. The difference between mental illness and people who are just kind of down on their luck, for example, they lost a job, they can't find another job, and then they default on all their payments, or just the cost of living where they live is greater than the job that they have. The difference between people in those kinds of situations where external factors are causing their homelessness and mentally ill people where the internal factor, their mental illness, is causing their homelessness, is that the mental illness itself can also push them away from their support systems. So either directly they might offend or threaten, you know, become a risk to their family and friends, and medical practitioners, in which case those individuals decide to, you know, take a step back, or friends and family fully understand what's going on, and they either don't believe it's real or they don't want to deal with it, so they turn a blind eye, or, and this happens more often than you think, the person who's going through an episode doesn't think anything's wrong with them because they're experiencing it. They think they're fine, and they're defaulting on payments and they get fired from their jobs. Maybe they're isolated from their families, so their families don't know, and by the time they find out, it's too late. So the difference between mental illness and other cases like homelessness through becoming mentally ill or through being mentally ill compared to other cases is that the mental illness also can keep people from either acquiring the support systems like medical teams and therapists that they need while they have the resources to acquire them. And can also push away family and external support systems, which is why you see more mentally ill people living on the streets compared to mentally ill people in hidden homeless situations where they're being where they're staying at family members' places or aunts and uncles' places or whatnot. Because if your family isn't supportive of your mental health in the first place, they will be less inclined to help you through your homelessness as a result of your mental illness. And if your mental illness is so extreme, or you're going through an episode that's so extreme that it leads you to homelessness, your family may not be equipped to even take care of you. You know, if you've become a danger to other people, they may not be equipped to take care of you. But if you've become so disillusioned within your mental illness, that you didn't think to check yourself into a hospital or get yourself a medical team or a therapist while you could afford it, while you had a permanent address, while you were, you know, still kind of like a registered participant in society. Now, as a homeless person who might even be worse than before, and if your family also cannot provide those resources for you, can't provide you a therapist or can't provide you a medical team, you're now kind of in a cycle where you're homeless and going through mental health episodes or episodes related to your illness, and you can't really get out of that and you can't really get help. Now talking about homelessness being the cause of mental health, when you're homeless, there's a lot of factors that go into it. Again, stress. You can start to have very, very poor self-esteem, especially if you're coming from homelessness, that's more societal and more external. And you know, you were doing fine, and then it was just losing that one job or not getting that promotion and not getting paid more that kind of spiraled you down into this situation. Low self-esteem, and then also internalized stigma and your own self-loathing. So again, if you have a certain view of homeless people where you think, you know, these people just don't work hard enough, they're just not trying their best, they just need to get up and get a job and find an address, and there's so many support systems, and social assistance systems, and they're just being lazy. And then you are now in a situation where you need to access these social support systems, and you learn that they're much more difficult to get into than you just thought. You can start to put all of those negative opinions and preconceptions that you had of homeless people onto yourself, which contributes to poor self-esteem. You can also feel lonely, worthless, hopeless, or isolated. Again, if you are homeless, even if you're at risk of homelessness, you might feel lonely and isolated because you don't have the funds or the ability to go out and hang out with your friends or coworkers anymore. You can't afford it. You might need to downsize, so you don't want to invite anyone over because where you are living could be poorly furnished, if furnished at all. If you're absolutely homeless, you have no support systems, that's pretty self-explanatory. You're completely cut off pretty much from the rest of society. And being homeless is lonely within itself because a lot of homeless people can't trust other homeless people. Nor can they trust the systems put in place that are supposed to help them. A lot of homeless people refuse to go to shelters because they're not run properly. Or there's a lot of theft and a lot of assaults within those shelters. A lot of shelters are on a lottery system, and you can feel less like a human being and more like cattle, like an animal, or like a number, you know. It can feel like people are playing with your well-being and just kind of pulling your livelihood or pulling your, you know, your ability to sleep somewhere warm out of a bowl or out of a hat if they just give you a number and they're like, there's 100 of you and we only have 20 beds. And again, that comes back to also societal views of the homeless as well. If homeless people generally cannot pay into their own social systems in order to get better social assistance, because if they could pay into that, they wouldn't be homeless because they would just be paying money in order to support themselves like everyone else. Because they don't have that money, they need taxes and funding to go into these social programs so that they can be helped to get back onto their feet. But if where they're living, the majority of people who are paying those taxes and paying into those social assistance systems don't believe that homeless, or believe that all of the fault of homelessness lies on the homeless individual, they're going to be stuck in a cycle where they can never get the help they need to get out of homelessness because those kinds of assistance programs don't have enough funding to help people. Never mind to help them get set up into an apartment and, get off of substances and to get mental health treatment and to get back into the working society. I'm not even talking about that. Those programs won't even have enough money to put enough beds in their shelters. Or even if there's enough beds, there won't be enough food donated or enough money allocated to purchase food to feed all those people in those beds. So there's not even enough money to just maintain basic human needs of homeless people around. Never mind enrichment programs for them to, you know, get a degree, get an education, or whatnot. But homelessness can cause mental illness. Not cause it, as in, you know, you're homeless and you're automatically depressed, boom. But if you had a predisposition for a certain mental illness, either genetically or just environmentally, homelessness can bring it out faster if you already have a mental illness. But it was... your mental illness was kind of not subdued. It was handled, I suppose. That's not the right word, but it was handled or it was made consistent through medications and treatments and whatnot. Homelessness can exacerbate those mental illnesses either because you don't have access to medication anymore because you can't afford it, or a lot of homeless people lose their documents. I'm talking about absolute homelessness. So you don't have any supports. You might lose your documents. You won't have a health card anymore. You're not paying into health insurance anymore. So you might not even be able to access those services, even if you do have your health card. So you won't get those prescriptions. You obviously won't get your therapy anymore. A lot of homeless people do turn to substances regardless of mental health issues because it's just so difficult living in any kind of homelessness, and those substances might further exacerbate mental illnesses that are already there, or can cause the onset of a mental illness, especially if you are using substances that you would never use pre-homelessness, or you are overusing / abusing substances that you used to use pre-homelessness. So mental illness can lead to homelessness and can lead to absolute homelessness, just because of the nature of, or the severity of, certain mental illnesses. You might also push away your support systems as well, and you won't be able to, you know, go to an aunt or a cousin's or whatnot to stay. Or if you are especially in absolute homelessness can help progress mental illnesses that were there, but to a lesser degree. Or even if you're at risk of homelessness, or you are someone who's experiencing hidden homelessness, that isolation and low self-esteem can also lead you towards substance abuse, which can or might not exacerbate a mental illness. But even if it doesn't, that substance abuse itself might cause you to either lose your at-risk status of homelessness and just be homeless, or even if you're experiencing hidden homelessness, whoever is helping you might kick you out, and then at that point you are absolutely homeless. And then let's talk about youth, because I touched on as well people who are just born into poverty, born into poor situations, being unable to pull themselves out of those situations. And among homeless youth, this is something that I actually read, some reasons why youth become homeless are, the top three that were listed were family conflict, dropping out of school, and parental substance abuse. So two out of three of those have to do with families. And you don't get to choose your family, as we all know. So these individuals were already born into a disadvantaged situation. Family conflict, that could be, you know, abuse at home, physical, emotional, verbal, or sexual abuse at home, which can cause a youth to run away and end up homeless. And again, parental substance abuse, that's not a good environment for anyone to be in, being forced to be around people who are abusing substances and are probably not getting help. Never mind, you know, a youth who is dependent on these individuals, so if they go out on their own. And then dropping out of school, which, yes, there are some kids who are just belligerent and they're like, I don't want to go to school, and then they drop out and then they realize that they've made poor decisions. But a lot of the time, dropping out of school is a byproduct of either family conflict or substance abuse, or just poor nurturing, you know, not being, not having parents overseeing what you're doing as effectively as they should be. As well, there's, you know, issues with mental health and well-being when it comes to youth. So problems with if they do have mental health issues and their families aren't supportive, or their families carry views towards mental health that are harmful or abusive to the youth, or they're going through like identity issues, for example, sexuality, and they need to leave the home because they're not being supported, or they're being abused, or and they're in a situation that could cause them harm. And I think what a lot of people forget is that these youth turn into adults, right? They keep growing. So we think about homeless youth and we think, you know, no child should be on the street. No child should wonder where their next meal is coming from, or wonder if they're going to have heat on a cold winter night. But what we do forget is that that 10 to 21-year-old, let's say, that ran away and is living on the street because of home abuse or substance abuse or whatnot, that had to drop out of school because they had to stay away from their families, or they just had to survive, so they didn't have time to go to school, they didn't have the money to pay for the resources of school. That youth grew up, and if they were never given an adequate chance to come out of the situation, because even programs for homeless youth are abysmal, they're just going to be growing up in homelessness, in poverty. So when you look at someone who's in their 40s and you wonder, you know, oh, I wonder what he did to get there, that 40-year-old individual could very well have been a 16-year-old who had to leave their house because they were being abused for whatever reason, had to drop out of school took a whole bunch of dead-end jobs, jobs that they could never progress in because they didn't have an education, probably made some poor decisions alongside of that because they had watched their parents make the same poor decisions. And all of these factors, you know, created what is now their situation of homelessness. So those are things to think of. So we covered what is homelessness, everyone who is homeless mentally ill, what causes homelessness in the mental health community, and does what comes first, homelessness or mental health. And now I just want to talk about how we can help. And I also wrote an article about this, and it's called Holiday/Everyday Kits for the Homeless, because some people create like homeless care kits in which they put like water bottles and granola bars and different pairs of socks and underwear and period products. Feminine hygiene products are really, really needed. So that blog post, if you want to check it out, I decided to write it down. That way, if you would like to refer to it, if you wanted to make your own kit, you very well can. And that's going to be there, so you don't need to listen to 40 minutes of this before you get to the kit section. But how can you help? Volunteer is one. And I'm making this audio around the holiday season because it's the season of giving, you know? So hopefully we think of people who are less fortunate than us. But, and I wrote this in my article, just because the holidays are seasonal doesn't mean homelessness is seasonal. And a lot of people think, you know, it's Christmas, I'm going to donate to this, I'm going to give these people this, whatnot. And that's great. That's amazing. But there are people who are homeless 365 days of the year. So if you're going to volunteer, try and choose a position, either in a soup kitchen or reading to people, or, you know, even if you can, like, volunteer your time to supervise children for, again, single mothers or for families who are either at risk of homelessness or who are experiencing hidden homelessness and can't afford the costs of childcare. So you can donate your time for a whole bunch of different things, not only in the holiday season, but year round. Donate is another big thing if you don't have the time to volunteer. Donate. It doesn't just have to be money. You can donate, again, toys for children who are living in households that are either experiencing hidden homelessness or at risk homelessness, or you can donate to shelters for people who are experiencing absolute homelessness so that they have new sleeping bags or new backpacks, or again, feminine hygiene products are really, really huge. Or if you see a homeless person just on the street, donate some items to them, you know, donate some food, or whatnot, because again, a lot of homeless people on the street do not go to shelters, because shelters for them can be more dangerous, or they've had poor experiences in the shelters, or with just the system, quote unquote, in general, and they've been burned and they don't want to go back. So donate your time, donate items, or, you know, your money, and I have that article that has a specific list of just items that you can donate if you want to make a care package or if you want to donate anywhere. I read one place a really good thing is if you're going to take old clothes, don't donate them to Salvation Army or Goodwill, because those places, I mean, they're stores. They're still making a profit. Even if the shirt that you bought for $20 is selling for $2, that's still $2 that a family might not have. If the clothes are good enough, try, you know, do some time, take some time, do some research, try and find organizations, non-for-profit organizations that give their donations directly to the individuals, families, whatnot, who need those resources that they can't afford, even if it is marked down all the way to $2 or $3. And donate your clothes and food to those individuals. Donate not expired. So many people clean out the kitchens of, you know, dead relatives and just give expired food items to food banks and food pantries. And that's not helpful. You know, that's not what they need. Find your not expired food, or buy food, literally just buy food, of non-perishable items and donate to your local food pantry. And also research and see if they need perishable items, like if they do need eggs or milk or things like that, and how many of which things they need, because those things are perishable. So, you know, they might have specific numbers. And lastly, vote. Literally vote. Become invested in the politics of wherever you live, especially your municipal politics. Find out what the candidates that are coming up, what their stance on homelessness is, what they plan on doing to either helping a homeless problem that is happening in your community, or if there isn't a very drastic homeless problem, there's always someone who is homeless or at risk of homelessness or who's living in hidden homelessness. So what are they doing to address those people? But also, what are they going to do to make sure that the levels of homelessness that your community is experiencing stays low? So get involved, especially in your municipal politics and your municipal government, and find out who's doing what to help homelessness. Make calls, send emails, send texts to certain numbers to let your elected officials and the people that represent you and make the laws and allocate money for different social systems. Let them know that you care about homeless individuals, and that you want these individuals to have as much of a fighting chance as anyone else. Furthermore, check out what these candidates have to say about youth, especially at-risk youth and youth in abusive, stressful situations. Because a lot of the times, those youth grow up to be those homeless individuals, or grow up to, even if they aren't homeless, they are at a higher risk to become those adults who are at risk of homelessness or who are living in hidden homelessness. So find out what your elected officials care about homeless, like what their stance are on homeless individuals and also on at-risk youth, because both homeless individuals and youth are demographics that can't vote or who are not in a position to vote. Youth obviously are not old enough to vote, and homeless individuals, I'm not sure exactly what the laws are, if they're obviously citizens, but at the end of the day, if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, or where you're going to sleep, or how you're even going to use the bathroom, the last thing that you're going to do is vote, especially if you don't have internet or TV or any connection to those officials. You don't know what they stand for, you don't have a pamphlet, they don't pander to you, so you don't know what it is they stand for. So it's up to us who are in a more privileged situation, who do have the luxury and the ability to vote, to stand up and say, you are not doing anything to campaign to these groups of people because these groups of people don't vote for you and they don't have the money. But I have the money and I do vote for you, and I want you to care as much about the less fortunate as you do about me. And that's really, really important. Youth again fall through the cracks because they just can't vote. Homeless people and the less desired people, like the less desirables, quote unquote, in society, also fall through the cracks when it comes to government policies, because A, they don't have the money, B, they're not sending out the votes, and C, the voter population spends a lot of time doing a lot of mental gymnastics to separate themselves and other themselves from those individuals that they deem less desirable, or, they deem are in a situation that they, quote unquote, would never find themselves in. So there has to be a good group of us who stand up and they say, no, I see these people, I see these individuals, and they're people too, and they deserve just as much recognition. Which brings me to my last point of how you can help. See homeless people as people. They're a person just like you. They have lives and experiences and memories just like you. They're not someone to look down on. They're not someone to sneer at, not someone to laugh at or make fun of. They're not a caricature. They are human beings. And they deserve just as much respect as anyone else. I'm currently looking in the new year to try and find places that I can volunteer and help out at and give back at, just in my own free time, because that's how I want to do better. I'm also old enough to vote now, so I'm trying to figure out that whole system. But just do what you can, I suppose. Do what you can. I have a YouTube now. It's personally borderline. Again, the Twitter's always pers borderline, P-E-R-S borderline. Instagram's the same thing, P-E-R-S borderline. And the Medium blog is also P-E-R-S borderline, and on the Medium blog is where you can find the holiday/everyday kits for the homeless, kit ideas for the homeless, in which you can find. I tried to focus on lesser known things, so basically just things that people don't usually think about when they are creating kits for the homeless. A big one, feminine hygiene products, undergarments, so things like socks and underwear and even sports bras. And I added a couple of other things as well, that usually don't make their way into care packages for the homeless. So if you want to check that out, feel free to. And today's question or comment is just about is about the topic of mental health and homelessness. What are you doing to give back and to help out the homeless community? And what are your ideas for what other people can do to give back and help out the homeless community? And also, what are you putting in your care kits for homeless individuals? Because there's always something that no one else has thought of that could be of great use to an individual who is experiencing homelessness. Thank you all for listening. I didn't expect this to be this long. Oh my gosh, it's kind of rambly. It's hard because I'm trying to say things and not offend anyone, but also get my point across. Thank you all for listening and for listening this far. Thank you all in discovery, recovery, just learning, or anything in between. And as always, I will be here for you until the next podcast.